You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 191 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Understanding Society Through Spiritual Scientific Knowledge, Social Threefolding, Christ, Lucifer, and Ahriman. 15 lectures translated by Matthew Barton. This is Lecture 12, given in Dornach on the 2nd of November, 1919. Our reflections yesterday will have shown you that in order to get insight into the real driving forces in human development and human nature, we must take full account of the powers of Lucifer, of Christ, and of Ahriman, and of their effect. These powers have certainly already been in play during the course of world evolution, and yet they were active in spheres that did not require human beings to have clear awareness of the way in which they worked. The very purpose of our fifth post-Atlantean epoch is that we increasingly acquire awareness of what works through us into earthly existence. It would actually already be necessary to reveal far, far more of the living mysteries of humanity if humanity had a greater inclination to absorb things in a more factual and objective way. But without certain insights of the kind indicated yesterday, humanity will make no progress initially either with the social realm or with inner life. Consider for a moment something that relates to our reflections on society, in which we have now been engaging for several months. They aim to show the need to separate cultural and spiritual life, as well as the life of rights, or the state, from merely economic life. Above all, they aim to establish conditions across the world, or at least, and we cannot presently do more than this, to see that conditions across the world will be right if they establish an autonomous life of spirit, one that is independent of the other structures in society, unlike our present cultural and spiritual life, which is fully entangled with economic life on the one hand and the political life of the state on the other. Either modern civilized humanity will have to adjust to this kind of autonomous life of culture and spirit, or modern civilization will decline and degenerate, leaving Asiatic cultures to develop something new for humanity in the future. If you do not believe yet that things are as serious as I suggest, then you are in a sense furthering preparations for Ahriman's incarnation in the future. Today already, one can discern in outward things, outward realities of human life, aspects that can inform us of this truth. Ahriman's incarnation will benefit very especially from a refusal to establish an autonomous, free life of spirit, instead leaving this entangled in economic circulation or in the life of the state. This is because Ahrimanic powers have the greatest interest in maintaining this merger of spiritual life with economic life and the state. Ahrimanic powers regard a free life of spirit as a kind of darkness, and they will experience human interest in this free life of spirit as a burning fire, a soul fire, but nevertheless a powerfully blazing fire. Therefore, in order to find the right stance toward the incarnation of Ahriman in the near future, we are obliged to establish this free life of spirit. But nowadays there is still a strong tendency to conceal the realities we spoke of yesterday. The great majority of people conceal these things since they do not wish to contemplate the truth, the reality in things, preferring to delude themselves with words that are divorced from realities. Sometimes this endeavor to avoid approaching realities at all costs is one we might call honest and well-meaning. Think for a moment of something like the letter by Romain Rolland, just published, in which the author states that we should no longer allow ourselves to be blinded by what the current victorious powers used to say about justice, about legal representation, and so on. He has been moved to make such statements in response to the treatment of Russia by the Entente powers. He says that irrespective of whether we are dealing with kingdoms or republics, these things said about law and justice are only phrases, are naturally concerned only with power. We can say that an apparent engagement with realities such as this will invariably and repeatedly lead to blindness. Romain Rolland's blindness is as great as it always was. His illusions have not diminished. They would only diminish if such people got beyond mere phrases and recognized that all they desire signifies nothing unless they can come to truly understand that the old centralized state as such, irrespective of its particular constitution and structure, whether it is a democracy, republic, monarchy, or what have you, is a path to Ahriman's incarnation, unless it is given a threefold tripartite form. All such things are therefore merely declamatory. Even this recent, quote, world circular, close quote, by Romain Rolland. People do not grasp realities, since they can only be comprehended if one recognizes how things must be deepened through spiritual perception. And here it is necessary to delve very deeply and thoroughly into the nature and essence of things. I'm sure you know a text widely spoken in the world, quote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and a God was the Word," close quote. Try for a moment to determine whether people regard these words with all due gravity. They utter them, but just as a phrase. You can see this from the following. Most people place no importance on the fact that these lines are spoken in the imperfect tense. Quote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and a God was the Word," close quote. Here, word must at the same time have its older ancient Greek meaning. It is not the word as people understand it today, merely a signifying sound, but the inward spirit. But the imperfect tense is used to refer to this word too. Quote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and a God was the Word," close quote. And so, one has to say that since the Word was in the beginning, it no longer is. Otherwise, the text would have to say, quote, "Now is the Word," close quote. Nor is the Word with God, but was with God. And a God was the Word, and so no longer is. This is the way the text appears in the Gospel of St. John itself. For what would otherwise be meant if it said, quote, "And the Word has become flesh and has been dwelling among us," close quote. The text relates, after all, to what lies in the further development of the Word. And by Word is meant everything that we can gain through our intelligence as intellectual wisdom. We must be clear that everything we can acquire through what is represented here by the Word is not what modern people should seek today and in the near future. If the text was to address something present now, it would really have to read, quote, "Let the human being seek the Spirit revealed in the Word, for the Spirit is with God, and the Spirit is a God," close quote. humanity has to move forward from the Word to the Spirit, to perception and knowledge of the Spirit. As I recall these first words of the Gospel of John, you can see how disinclined people are today to take these things really seriously, to really go beyond a merely arbitrary interpretation, such as is commonly given today to the most serious matters. We need to see that in our human nature, too, we must scrutinize what intelligence signifies and illumine it through what is revealed in spiritual vision. Though spiritual vision itself is not always the essential thing, so much as understanding of what has been spiritually perceived. I have repeatedly stressed that it is not only the clairvoyant who can understand the truth of what is clairvoyantly perceived, but every person, since people now certainly possess the maturity to comprehend the spiritual element in human nature. They need only resolve to exert themselves, and not rest too comfortably on their laurels. But for people to raise themselves to this fitting level, they must accord due seriousness to things such as those with which we ended yesterday's reflections. Yesterday, citing a somewhat trivial example, I showed how easily numbers can deceive us. But surely people have a superstitious belief in numbers today. Anything that can be enumerated is accepted as scientific. Science is enamored of weighing, measuring, and counting. In the social sciences, statistics are greatly prized. Likewise, just a kind of weighing and counting. It will be very hard indeed for humanity to recognize that everything, absolutely everything that measure and number tell us of the outer world, is illusory. Look, what does measuring mean? It means comparing against a standard. I can measure a line if I repeatedly compare it against a small rule. If you measure something, irrespective of whether it be lengths, surfaces, or weights, no account is taken of qualities. The number 3 is always the same number, whether you use it to count sheep, people, or politicians. No quality is indicated by the number, only quantity. But this means that everything we obtain in the form of number becomes mere smoke and mirrors. And we must recognize that at the moment we enter the world that can be weighed and measured, that is, the world of space and time as it is given to us, we enter also a world of illusion, one that is a mere mirage, as long as we view it as a reality. This is really the ideal of contemporary thinking, to learn what all things in the temporal and spatial world signify, whereas, in fact, what these things signify is only their external aspect, and we must go beyond time and space to delve further and deeper if we wish to arrive at truth and essence. Thus a future time will come where people will say, quote, yes, I can grasp the natural world around me with my intelligence, can do so as is, for instance, the ideal pursued by science, but this view I acquire is purely aramonic, close quote. This doesn't mean we should reject science, that it ought not to exist, no. But we should remember that this science gives us only an aramonic mirage. Why is this? Why should we keep this science even though it offers us only smoke and mirrors? Because we are in a declining phase of earthly evolution. We are a being already in decline. If you look back to the 4th of the 5 post-Atlantean epochs, you find that people at the time had reached the highest relative point of knowledge and perception, whereas we are now already in decline. And in this state of relative decline, as I have explained before from various angles, our weakening corporeal nature would not cope with perceiving the world as the ancient Greeks still did. Quote, outward history, close quote, says nothing of this, of course. How would our worthy historians respond to such an idea today. They tell of the Greeks as if speaking of some region of the contemporary world, because they do not know that these Greeks looked upon nature with different eyes, that they listened out into the world with different ears than we possess. People today, and the historians will not tell you this, would continually get a headache or migraine if they saw and heard in their surroundings what the ancient Greeks saw and heard. The Greeks lived far more intensely in the external life of the sense world. In comparison, we have already died away from such a living grasp of our outer surroundings. For us to cope with it, we have to be presented with a mere mirage of these outer surroundings. And that is indeed what is presented to us. What we do not merely see with our senses, but what we dream in scientific ideas about our outer surroundings, is most of all a mirage. Those who dream most about this outer world are the very ones who think they are most realistic in their thinking. Darwin or John Stuart Mill are real dreamers. The real dreamers are the ones who think they are most realistic. But we cannot entirely rely on our interior life. There are many among you who can see from the developments that occurred in the Theosophical Society that merely pursuing interior experience, if done as many people today endeavor to, will not lead to anything that it should, since we must lead ourselves and not simply be led. Often, instead of reaching beyond ordinary life to higher vision or insight in freedom, through our own resolve, appeal is made to the unfree aspect of the human being. All kinds of hallucinatory capacities for illusion, are invoked instead. But we ought to say this to ourselves. Just as outward science becomes armonic, so higher evolution of human interiority simply becomes luciferic if we mystically deepen this inner life that is innate in us. Anyone who, without any self-education, which is described in the book titled Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, undertakes to mystically deepen what already lies within him, will find the luciferic awakening within him and gaining particular ascendancy. And from this you will see that the luciferic element appears and arises today in anyone who even begins to brood on his interior experience. This element is actually terribly powerful today in contemporary humanity. It comes to expression in an egoism that most people do not even discern in themselves. Just consider how often we meet people who are satisfied with something they have done, who, as they may often say, have accomplished something that appears to them beyond reproof, according to their best knowledge and conscience. This is a purely luciferic perspective on things. You see, it doesn't at all matter in life whether we need to reprove ourselves or not, but rather that we perceive things objectively, that we comprehend and grasp them quite distinct from ourselves, that we comprehend the world and accomplish our actions in accordance with the objective course of realities. Most people today do not seek any objective penetration of the matter in hand, any discernment of how things should be done that is drawn from world historical necessities. For this reason, precisely on spiritual scientific foundations, we must emphasize the objective nature of things, thus that Ahriman is preparing his incarnation, and how we need to relate to this fact as human beings. In such questions, it really does not matter whether we need to reprove ourselves or not for the way in which we have done something. No, we must learn to discern objective phenomena. We must learn to perceive what acts in the world, and for the world's sake, conduct ourselves accordingly. But all this tends to the conclusion that as modern people we can only properly judge and evaluate things if we recognize that we hover, really, between two extremes, between the Aramanic on the one hand, which offers us an outward mirage, and the Luciferic within, which infiltrates us with illusions, hallucinations, and so on. Today people live out their Aramanic inclinations in science, and their Luciferic ones in religion. And in the realm of art, they oscillate between the one and the other. In recent times, some artists tended more toward the Luciferic, others toward the Aramanic. Those of a more Luciferic bent became expressionists, while those of a more Aramanic inclination became impressionists. And those who wish neither to follow the one nor the other school oscillate between them, with no proper judgment either of the Luciferic or the Aramanic, seeking to avoid both. Not Ahriman, I must and will not go there, for then I succumb to the Aramanic. Or, not the Luciferic, that must not be. And such people seek to be very decent and succumb neither to the Aramanic nor the Luciferic. But that is not what it's about. Rather, we should regard Aramanic and Luciferic impulses as two necessary scales. The scale beam balancing both is what we ourselves must be. That is the important thing. How can we educate ourselves to do this? We can do so by imbuing ourselves very strongly with a Luciferic element to counter what arises in us as Aramanic quality. What Aramanic element arises very strongly in us today? Knowledge of the outer world. The most Aramanic element of all is our material perception of the outer world, for this is only a mirage. And if we can develop keen, fervent, and enthusiastic interest in the mirage that arises from chemistry, physics, astronomy, and so on, through our own Luciferic interest, we detach from Ahriman something that should belong to him. It is precisely this that people do not want. It seems very boring to them. And many who flee outward material knowledge misjudge their task and prepare the very best earthly conditions for Ahriman's incarnation. Likewise, what springs up inside people today has a very strong Luciferic character. How can we educate ourselves properly in this respect? By taking our own Aramanic element and drawing it into ourselves, that is, avoiding all illusions about our interiority and regarding or observing ourselves as we otherwise regard the outer world. People today should really experience how needful they are of educating themselves in this way. Anyone with a certain capacity to observe these matters will frequently encounter the following fact of life. Someone comes to you and relates something he feels indignant about in the behavior of person A, person B, person C, and countless others. He describes very precisely how indignant he is about this, that, and the other person. And he has no idea that everything he relates are his own qualities or flaws. People have no sense at all of this. This idiosyncrasy has never been as widespread as it is today. And those who think this does not apply to them are the ones who do it most of all. What is involved here is to approach one's own interiority with Aramanic coldness, Aramanic sobriety. This interiority of ours will still be hot enough, even if cooled down a little. There's no need to fear that it will grow too cool. And it is true to say that modern humanity needs to find the right stance toward the forthcoming incarnation of Ahriman, to become more objective about inner life, at the same time bringing much subjective interest to bear on the surrounding world, not fantasy, though, but attentiveness, devotion, and especially interest. You see, it is of great benefit to Ahriman and the path he is taking in order to shape his incarnation as favorably as possible if your education or other circumstances in life lead you to regard outward life as tedious. Just think how many people nowadays regard one thing or another as boring. For instance, I have met countless people who find it very boring indeed to acquaint themselves with the workings of banks, or the stock exchange, or single and double bookkeeping. It is never right to regard such things as utterly boring. To find something boring simply means that you haven't yet discovered the point where it comes to be of burning interest. Every dry accounts book can, if you discover the angle on it that makes it of keen interest, be just as interesting as the Maid of Orleans, or Schiller, or Shakespeare's Hamlet, or anything else, say the Sistine Madonna by Raphael. It is just a question of discovering the point where everything in life turns out to be fascinating. You might consider this very paradoxical, but it isn't. What is paradoxical is people's relationship to the truth nowadays. It is a far, far better stance to assume that we ourselves are flawed and unable to accomplish something than to ascribe this weakness to the world itself. Nothing better helps Ahriman prepare for his incarnation than for us to find something or other boring, to consider ourselves too good for something, to not want to have anything to do with whatever it is. We must always look for the point or angle that allows us to see the interest in something. Rather than subjectively rejecting or accepting things, it is important to objectively perceive the extent to which there is Ahrimanic or Luciferic quality in something, so that the balance beam sinks too low on the one side or the other. Finding something interesting does not mean regarding it as right or justified, but only developing an inner strength to unite with the matter in hand and help send it in the right direction. You may recall, it's a long time ago now, that a number of our friends bought some books on mathematics, a kind of theosophical sport developed in which people were buying Libsen's books on mathematics. But after a while, they put them back on their shelves and left them there, showing little sign of any emerging mathematical knowledge. Of course, I am not suggesting that you ought to revive such things straight away. I am not making any such demands. And yet, taking up a subject that is of no interest to you, finding the point where you develop new insight into the world, is of huge importance. Something like this is certainly needed today. Such things should be taken seriously. Things also, such as those I wanted to impress on you, in our reflections here, about the way in which Lucifer and Ahriman intervene in humanity's evolution alongside the Christ impulse. Now, if Luciferic wisdom had never existed, the gnosis of the early centuries would not have enabled people to gain understanding of the mystery of Golgotha. For as Luciferic wisdom grew decadent, understanding of the mystery of Golgotha also gradually declined. And today? Yes, where should we now seek this understanding? Those who can understand the nature of external Ahrimanic science realize that it cannot be found there. Take someone like Cardinal Newman, who played an important part in religious life in the second half of the 19th century. When he was invested as a cardinal in Rome, he said he could foresee no salvation for humanity's religious development without the dawn of a new revelation. But he went no further than this. He showed no particular inclination to receive anything of the new life of spirit that can now penetrate humanity from worlds of spirit. He spoke only in the abstract. Humanity needs a new revelation, and we can see this in all domains. Nowadays, you can hear debates and discussions about our moral deterioration over the last 4 to 5 years. From this it is concluded that religious instruction should be intensified in schools. But to this we must repeatedly object that we have, after all, had religious instruction, and the modern era has been shaped precisely by its influence. If more of the old is to be introduced, the same confessions as before, we will just go round in circles. And before long we will be back where we were in 1914, simply reviving the old formula and the old institutions. We ought to recognize instead that quite different yearnings now live in the human subconscious from what comes to expression on the surface. When we founded the Waldorf School in Stuttgart, we had to establish religious instruction by inviting priests from the various confessions to give it. The Catholic priest instructs the Catholics, the Protestant priest the Protestants. I don't even wish to speak of the problems we had with the priests themselves. That's quite another story. But I do want to say that a desire immediately arose for religious instruction at the school, quite separate from these confessions. To start with, I thought very few pupils would attend such lessons, compared with those of Catholics and Protestants. But in Stuttgart, despite the fact that you can hear fierce invectives against the anthroposophic movement from almost every pulpit, a large number of children, at least five times more than we could have expected, registered for a kind of anthroposophic religious instruction that must be taught in two classes. Subjectively, this is not necessarily at all welcome, for it could easily land us in deep water. Let's leave that to one side. I wished only to show that there is a yearning within people to move forward, but that they are still slumbering and do not see how powers are at work that suppress this longing. And then there is usually a lack of courage to really express this yearning outwardly, to bring it to the surface. But consider what the effect might be of insight, say, into Ahriman's forthcoming human incarnation, and of how he is preparing this through things I described today and yesterday. We need to gain objective awareness of such matters, so that we can adopt the right stance to everything occurring around us as preparation for the incarnation of Ahriman in the future. Only if you reflect thoroughly and maturely on what we have said about such Ahrimanic currents in life will you be able to consider these things with the seriousness they deserve. The end of Lecture 12.